Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and this is the Hour of Mind Power, and I'm so delighted that we're going to be able to share with you today a very, very special, well, a very special story about a family. But before I do that, my guest is Heather Summerhays Carew. Heather, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be part of it.
Now, I am going to want to read something from the very front of your book. It's about you, and I think it says a great deal. It's very poignant, at least is my perception. I live where the river meets the sea. I live where the waters of the Hudson end their cold journey to the Atlantic. My windows open to the east, the direction Native Americans believe one must face to ask blessings for a new beginning. The morning sun glances off the water strongly enough to blind you. Late afternoon turns the entire west side of Manhattan to flame. At night, the rising moon hangs above the jeweled horizon like the eye of God. The river flows by me and flows through me. Memory flows through me. I live where the river meets the sea, where push comes to shove, where love and anguish, blame and forgiveness, laughter and sorrow converge on the way to understanding. That is about my guest, Heather, today. Those are her words that describes her space and her place. The very first sentence in her book consists of five words. My sister tries to breathe. Heather, this is your story, 65 Roses. It's a memoir about your sister, and that beginning was on Labor Day weekend, 1980. You were born and raised in Brantford, Ontario, and educated in Toronto and New York. Your father is the founding president of the Canadian Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and both your mom and dad received and honor the Order of Canada in recognition for their work in inaugurating this wonderful organization. And you've been an actress, a dancer. You are married to an actor. And you have a fabulous view of Manhattan.
This is all true.
Yes. And I just love the way the book opened.
Well, I'm looking out at the Hudson River right now, and Manhattan is indeed sparkling and twinkling on the near horizon.
This book came about because you gave a promise to your sister when she, just before she was ready to move along to the next experience in life, that you would write the story.
Yes.
And it wasn't just about her. She wanted you to tell the story about how a disease affected your entire family.
Well, she asked me to write what we lived through together. And for many years, actually, I tried to just write her story and discovered, as a writer, that the only story one can really tell is one's own.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn how to tell her story through my eyes. And because of the nature of our relationship, as sisters, and particularly as sisters, one of whom was healthy, which was me, and Pam, who had cystic fibrosis, because of the way the family dynamic was changed by the disease and the way we organized around her, I really tended to feel that my story was not so important as hers. So part of writing the book really became also a journey for me in discovering my own value and my own self-worth. And, you know, as a sister, I think looking back, Pam probably knew me much better than I knew myself, and certainly loved me better than I loved myself. And so in writing the book in a way, and asking me to write the book, she was able to give me the gift of knowing myself and loving myself as she did. And finally, I understood the value of telling my own story and therefore revealing her story through mine.
I think anybody that would read your book, if they've ever experienced, and I don't know of very many people that have not been touched by trauma and illness and, you know, people, whether it's a friend or a family member, it has an impact on you that very few people can truly understand until they have walked that path. But I have to tell you, when I was reading your book, and I wrote this in the margins of the book, I'm one, when I'm reviewing material for authors, I have a yellow highlighter and an ink pen, and I scribble.
Oh, my.
Book. So I put in the margins, words flow like music, floating, connecting, and it just emitting emotions and images that touch the heart and mind. And that's what I wrote. And I hadn't gotten very far into your book.
Well, thank you. You know, a reader has described the book in a way that I wish I'd thought of it, but she said it's tough, romantic, and fiercely hopeful, and that it was for anyone on their own hero's or heroine's journey. I knew when I started out to write this that it was going to be tough to write, and that I was interested in not writing a kind of My Sister Was an Angel book.
Uh-huh.
But I was more interested in the underbelly of the experience of growing up as a well sibling in a family with chronic terminal illness. And I was interested in the tough part because I think that's the part that people don't know, that friends and neighbors and even extended family don't really realize what you're going through. And I wanted to tell that part of the story. And so I also came to understand as I was writing it that if you're going to tell a tough story, it's probably good if you can tell it beautifully. So I really attempted to make it a literary memoir, and I focused a great deal on the writing and the craft of telling it.
You did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
You really, really did. Now let's talk about you and your sister. You described your sister and yourself as baby boomers, born in the post-war era, smack in the middle of the 20th century.
Yep.
And you talk about, you know, the house on Willow Drive and how you had to leave that. And you really talk about living in that time frame. And you have such a beautiful way of describing it where you can feel like you're right there with you. And you two had your own wishing rock. Tell us how that developed.
Well, we had moved into a new house. We were really just youngsters, you know, about, I guess, maybe she was 6 and I was about 8. And it was in a new subdivision, and we went to exploring around, as kids were able to do in those days, into the woods and the surrounding farmland. And we found this big hunk of pink granite that was big enough for the two of us to sit on. And so my dad brought it back in the forklift truck and put it at the front of our lawn, and we used to sit on it and wish on a star. And Pam would always wish that she could get fatter because her CF made her so skinny. And I wished that God would find a way to cure her.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a very unique and wonderful relationship. I mean, there were times when we fought like two cats in a bag, and other times when we just held each other, falling down, laughing. We had the paradox, really, of I was a very sort of volcanic personality, and she was very quietly determined and stoic. Both of us were feisty in our own way and really had, I think, great, both of a strength of character and a force of personality. But she had a wonderful understanding of spirit that I think came from knowing all her life that her life was going to be limited. Of course, she used to say to me all the time, everyone's life is limited, and some people just show their limitations more readily than others. But I learned so much from her, especially during her later years. She lived till she was 26, which is still a very, very good age to live with CF. And she graduated college on the Dean's Honor List and ran her own daycare. She was an early childhood education specialist. And over the years of watching her battle her disease and sort of fighting with her, the four, I think, most important things I learned from her that I really want to share with people is that you can't be afraid, you can't control life, rather, by being afraid of it. So often we make our decisions out of fear. What if I do this or what if I don't do that? And living your life out of fear is really diminishing, and it diminishes your power. And which brings me to the second thing that I learned from her, which is the only real power we have in our lives is our power to choose our response to our circumstances. And I saw this in action with her even when her world was reduced to the size of her bed. She was still exercising her power to choose, and she would still choose positively. So I learned from her that you can choose to be loving, or you can choose to be bitter, you can choose to be angry, you know, or you can choose to be compassionate. You can choose to go down to your despair, or you can become a warrior on behalf of your own life and maybe the life of other people. And I think the another important thing I learned from her was the importance of creating joy in your life, not just looking for it, but creating it every day, a small minute of joy, have a great sense of humor, and understand the difference between surrender and giving up and never give up. And that's a lot to learn from a sister, especially one so young.
Absolutely. You, in your book, shared some points of information regarding cystic fibrosis. I was not aware of it, and I knew that there was this tremendous congestion in the lungs, and you talk about how when she was young, she had this cough, and the two of you would be playing, and she'd start to cough, and you'd have to hit her so that the mucus, which cystic fibrosis produces in the lungs, she'd be able to cough it up.
Yes.
And be able to release it, and the pounding on her back and all that kind of stuff. In fact, that was a family ritual that had
been
done on a regular basis. But I was not aware that for many, many hundreds of years that people said if you kissed a child, a little one, and they tasted salty, that that was an indicator of a disorder. And that really fascinated me because that was a sensory awareness that people had developed a long time ago.
Yeah, it's an old German saying, the child who tastes salty will soon die. It's an old German proverb. And because of the chemistry, if you will, of the disease, they do produce an excess of salt, and you can taste it on their skin. In fact, there's a scene in the book where, you know, because I'm the oldest of four, and I have two brothers, and my youngest brother, Jeff, also has CF. He's now 46. And when he was first born and my mom brought him home from the hospital, the first thing Pam and I did is we ran in the nursery and started to kiss him to see if he tasted salty. And then finally, I couldn't taste any salt. I was actually licking the poor little thing. And Pam was kissing him, and we couldn't figure it out. Actually, it took three diagnoses to find out that Jeff had CF. When he was first diagnosed, he was subclinical, and the disease didn't really express in any kind of serious symptoms until later in his teens. But yes, it kind of, that salty taste is one of the worldwide first symptoms of CF.
Now, most children with cystic fibrosis, they can diagnose them in infancy, but they can have different levels of it. Your brother, who is 40, he's lived, you know, a very independent life. He was determined. I mean, you have quite a strong group of personalities in your family. There's
yes,
no
we
way
do.
In your family.
It's our curse and our blessing.
Yes, absolutely. And he, because he was the youngest, and when he was diagnosed with it, I mean, your parents, the whole family, that what you had to go through with your sister was just amazing. So when he came along and he found out that he had the same problem, he was adamant that he wasn't going to go the route that she went, and he didn't.
Well, he didn't, but he didn't fight the same battles that she fought. And
right.
She fought a lot of physical battles. Not that she didn't fight psychological battles; she certainly did. But Jeff's were just very different. And there's always a big discussion with my brother and with a lot of people who have cystic fibrosis about this term mild CF. As my brother said to me once, you don't hear anybody say that they have mild cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You either have it or you don't. But the fact is that there are many hundreds of mutations of the gene, and so the disease can express itself in different ways with different people and with different severity at different times of life. But nevertheless, they're still all, regardless of the severity at any given time, they're still open to the same kind of opportune infection and other vagaries of the disease that can come along.
The title 65 Roses, you must tell the story about that because I thought it was just adorable.
Well, Pam was diagnosed when she was 4 and I was 6, and my mom came in and gathered us up onto our pink chenille bedspreads in her room and told us Pam had something called cystic fibrosis and explained what that was. Pam had been 6 since the day she was born, and since Pam was only 4, she couldn't pronounce the name of her disease, so she looked at me and said, I have 65 roses. And she used to go up and down the street and tell the neighbors that, and when she went to school, she told the teachers that. So it's a lovely name for a pretty nasty disease, and, you know, a lot of the kids say that, that they have 65 roses.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the time when your sister was born, when your mother was taking her from doctor to doctor, there was so little known about cystic fibrosis. She had to do a lot of the research on her own.
Yes.
And so she was the one that finally found out about it, but your grandmother was saying, please get this child to a specialist.
Yes. Well, you know, in those days, back in the 1950s and early 60s, the doctors, especially if you were from a small town somewhere, were much more godlike than they are today. Now we're encouraged to question our doctors, but in those days you didn't. So if you were told your child just had asthma or bad allergies, you believed it. My father's mother was very insistent that we get her to a specialist, and she went to several specialists, starting out with allergists. Of course, that's the really, truly wonderful and remarkable thing, that in those days, the doctors told my parents to take Pam home and just make her comfortable. There was no cure, there was no treatment, there was nothing that could be done. And less than 50 years later, because of the Canadian Cystic Fibrosis Foundation and the American Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, which very much work in collaboration with each other on research, the median age of survival is now 37 years. There's terrific treatment. There's a lot of people are having lung transplants. And there's a great reason now, if a child is born with CF today, to really hope for the best. We're still losing far too many of them, but the reasons for faith and hope are much, much stronger and more realistic than they ever were.
Now, at the time when your sister was diagnosed, it was said that her pancreas wasn't secreting the enzymes necessary to absorb nutrients from food.
Correct, yes.
So she could eat literally everything in the grocery store, and it was just going through her system.
It did. It just went in one hand and out the other.
Right, and her immune system wasn't getting enough of the nutrition so that it could survive.
Exactly, and then with the lungs being producing so much mucus, that sets up a real beautiful opportunity for pneumonia or any kind of infection, staph infection, to come in. And once that's in the lungs and you're so skinny, you know, you're so underweight, you have nothing to really fight it with.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a real vicious circle. And, you know, even my brother, who's 46, he had a big go this winter with a chest infection that we were worried that it might be touch and go there for a while. So even though he's very, very healthy normally, in fact, he's a whitewater rafting expert, and even during the winter he dons his wetsuit and goes out on the river.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other end of that spectrum, if he catches a bad cold, the consequences could be pretty severe.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of always living on the edge. It's like that way, I think, in any family where there's a chronic illness, or especially a chronic childhood illness. if it's juvenile diabetes or MS or muscular dystrophy or pediatric cancer or AIDS, whatever it is. I think the families are always walking that kind of fine line between a normal life and the medical crisis.
Oh, I think your statement in your book, you have one sentence that you say, the world of chronic terminal illness is in many ways akin to the world of war. And you also bring out how the condition with Pam, how it affected the family relationships that were supposedly supportive. And one of the things that you discovered, it was hurtful in the beginning. And I really think it's true that when people see something like this, they become very scared.
Because yes.
They are aware they're seeing death. They are aware they're looking at something that may not be changeable. They are looking at their own mortality in a sense that scares them to death.
Well, you have a marvelous insight about that.
And oh, I've seen it many, many times.
And, you know, even though your family or your friends and neighbors may be very good, loving people, something like this can be very frightening to them, very overwhelming. Sometimes I think they wonder if they, you know, offer a hand to help. Are you then going to ask for an arm, a leg, and the rest of them? You know, how much are they going to have to commit themselves? And I think the answer is, you know, whatever you can do to help a family in this situation, whether it's drop them a little note or a card once in a while saying how, you know, I think you're doing really well and I really admire you, or take mom out for coffee, or take one of the Wells siblings, make a date every month and take one of the Wells siblings to the mall or to a movie. There are so many small things you can do to be supportive of a family where there's, whether it's childhood illness or whether there's an adult who's ill. I mean, the same thing goes if you have a friend who has breast cancer or someone who's just had a heart attack, you know. Listening is a big thing. That's a great way to be supportive. A lot of people say other people need a good talking to, but mostly I think everybody needs a good listening to.
I think that's a very good point. Also, on the other side of the spectrum, and I relate to your mother, that she didn't want anybody to know any more than necessary.
No, she didn't.
Just like, you don't, this doesn't go outside the family. You don't talk about what I'm having to clean up. And your mother and father were incredible people. And considering what they went through and how your dad was doing all that he could do to be supportive of the family, your mother, I mean, the constant cleaning that she had to do and the laundry. And gee whiz, you know, I look at that and I think of how many people would be done in just by that. But she was an incredible woman. She ended up becoming a nurse herself before Pam died. That's one thing that Pam wanted to see her mother graduate.
Yes, yeah.
And
Pam said to Mom, when I die, there's going to be a big hole in your life and I want to make sure it's filled before I leave. So I want you to have your dream. And I want to know that I didn't rob you of it, so I want you to go back to school and get your nursing degree, which is what my mother had always wanted.
And she did that. Now, tell us how your dad started this foundation, because this was so important. It helped him to keep his sanity.
I think it did.
I really do. I mean, just from your story, it had to enable this man to feel like it gave him some sense of being able to do something. I mean, his wife is, your mom is cleaning and she's there, and she can't really work. She's doing everything she can because Pam needed so much attention. And then when she'd get pregnant, you know, that was a whole nother scenario.
Yes.
And your dad, I think that the organization gave him something, a purpose and value, because you feel so helpless.
Well, it was a very empowering act, and I didn't really realize till I was writing the book that my parents are actually activists. And how they came to that, I don't know. I think it must have just been in them because they were very young people in their early 20s from a small southwestern Ontario farm town in Canada. And not worldly people, not sophisticated people. That's not to say they weren't smart. They're both very smart people and have loads of character. But it's just in that situation, I think it's quite unusual to take the steps they did, but they were driven by the fact that they didn't want Pam to die, and if they couldn't save her, they didn't want other young children to die.
Mm-hmm.
So they, first of all, they went to the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto and asked the chief of staff if they could have the names and addresses of all the parents who'd had children diagnosed with CF. And the doctor said that would be unethical, and my dad said it would be unethical not to write these people and let their children die while they stood by and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they got the names of addresses. They wrote over 100 letters, I think close to 300 letters, personally to parents, and then they placed an ad in the Canada's national newspaper, the Globe and Mail, advertising a meeting of interested parties at the Sick Kids Hospital on May 23rd, 1959, which was my seventh birthday. And down they went, my dad in his new suit, which my mom had bought to make him look older and more authoritative. And they stood up in front of, there were over 100 people in the room, and some had driven hundreds of miles with their sick children in their arms and looked at my dad and said, "Are you going to do something to help us?"
Oh,
and my father said, "Yes." And the fight was on, and there was a wonderful group of parents that supported them, that became part of the board. And, you know, my parents, I remember them. I remember sitting there watching TV and listening to my parents make phone calls to doctors all over the United States and Canada, geneticists, talking to anybody they could who knew anything. And anyway, finally they got the foundation off the ground. They got a clinic started at the Hospital for Sick Children. And I'm very proud that a research team led by Dr. Lapsi Choi at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto were the leaders in finding the CF gene in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I keep telling my parents, you know, you've changed the world, and they just sort of shrug their shoulders and look at each other very mystified. They just say, well, we did what we had to do, and we would do it again. And just as a side note, they're the kind of people that when they retired, because they're both in their late 70s now, I would have hoped after all the years of struggle that they would just go to a beach in Florida and relax. But no, they volunteered their skills in third world countries for about 7 years and traveled to Russia and the Ukraine and all over doing volunteer teaching.
Amazing.
So that's the kind of people I come from. Great role models to have to live up to.
Well, not only that, I mean, your information about how a physician recognized your sister needed enzymes, how she lacked vitamin K, and it was because of much of the antibiotics that she had been given. There is so much good information in here that I think if there's anyone that knows of someone who has a child maybe that has this, or there's so much insight from your book regarding the disease, the organization, the experience of the family with this. And I just would like to say that here in your book, there's, and I'm going to read, it's for cystic, being 22 is like being 82 in a normal lifespan. As Pam put it to me, you knew that you only had so much time left, so you had to decide how you really wanted to spend it and not waste your time and energy on things that you didn't consider important.
Uh-huh.
And Pam said, I wish everyone lived more like that.
Well, and I think we should, and I think that's certainly, having lived the life I did with her and with my parents and I'm still living with Jeff, it makes my priorities really clear, you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of what's important to me and how I spend my energy and who I spend my time with. And I think those are all good ways of examining our own lives. And I also think that Pam, just in her story and how she came at life and how she dealt with her limitations, there's something in her story for everyone, whether they have illness that they're dealing with or not, because I can't imagine anybody's life not having some kind of obstacle or limitation that they need to work past at some point.
Right.
And I think her story is great inspiration for anybody who is on their hero's journey, as that reader had said to me. And
mm-hmm.
I also hope it's just a good story well told, you know. I'm really hoping book clubs will get into it and discuss it and enjoy it.
Well, it is well told. Pam, do you have a website? I know we're almost out of time here. What's your website?
It's www.65rosesthebook.com.
Now, is that the number 65?
No, it's written out.
65 Roses.
No hyphen, just 65rosesthebook.com. It's available on Amazon, in your local bookstore, and as of March, it will be available in Target stores. And it's doing quite well down here. It's only been out maybe 3 or 4 weeks, but it's taking off, and I hope it finds its audience.
Oh, I think it will. In fact, I know it has found its audience already in many ways, and I think once it's read, it will just keep going. Thank you so much, Heather.
Oh, terrific. Thank you.
You're welcome. Heather Summer Hayes, Carrie, has been my guest. Her wonderful book, 65 Roses. If you want a real, real story about life, about living, about purpose, about value, about love, this is a book to get. Add it to your library. Donna Sebo here, and go to 65roses.com. Remember, 65 is spelled out. And we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a
Donna
difference
Sebo
for you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com. Inspirational and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, if you are a new listener to the Donna Sebo Show, welcome. We're delighted to have you join us. And if you're wondering why I'm saying people can call in, well, I am an intuitive. I'm more than delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. And all you need to do is give me a buzz. I just want your first name or your initial, and then after that, I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything you're interested in. It's getting closer, folks. Yes, yes, yes. I am going to be heading on down to the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival. It's starting on Friday, so I'm going to be flying down tomorrow, and we will be here live at BBS Radio tomorrow afternoon, per usual. But this event is going to be absolutely dynamic. We've got so many wonderful speakers. Dan Millman, who's the Peaceful Warrior, George Norrie, Richard Hoagland, Daniel Brinkley, oh, and there's just so many more, including myself. Yes, I will be speaking on Saturday. But we've got more than that going on. We've got yoga classes. We have got a spiritual comedy night. You've got a conscious business symposium. So there is a lot happening at this event, and this is being held again February 8th to the 11th at the LAX Hilton, which is 5711 West Century Boulevard in Los Angeles. Now, if you'd like more information, if you'd like some tickets, then what you need to do is call 800-367-5777. That's 800-367-5777. Or go to their website, consciouslifeexpo.com. And you're going to be able to find out all kinds of neat stuff. I am going to be in booth number 517, and I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to say hello to those of you who will be going to this wonderful event. So just remember, it's starting Friday, and I will be doing a live broadcast with some of the people that are going to be involved with this expo on Friday. So we're going to be talking about all kinds of things, and I'll be looking forward to sharing all of that with you live right from the expo. Don't forget, too, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about how Buster can lead with Deborah Potter. For those of you who are animal lovers, you're not going to want to miss Deborah. She's just a sweetheart. And then Dr. Petty, who is a biochemist, a man that has been involved in so many different modalities with healing, he's going to be on the air with me on Thursday. So we are going to be talking about some real interesting things. Some of it will be relating to the 10 myths about wellness, so you're not going to want to miss this. So we've got a real dynamic week, and I am just so looking forward to sharing it all with you. So if you want to call in and chat with me, this is a very, very good time to do it. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, our direct line of 530-876-3222. When I was preparing for the show today, there were a number of different items that had crossed my mind that I thought, well, I'll bring them up. One of the items was Wise Sayings of Benjamin Franklin. And this comes from one of my previous guests who had written about Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin was always a man he idealized. And they were the 10 laws of wealth and abundance. And I thought, hey, that's a pretty good thing to talk about. So why don't I just mention them? Number one, he that won't be counseled can't be helped. And I thought, those are very true words. That's why so many times people would say, if you don't ask, you don't get. And if you are wanting to be counseled by someone, if you're wanting information from someone, be sure you open up your ears and your brain to listen to what they have to say. Don't do this, that won't work, that won't work, that won't work, without allowing for the information and the reason behind the information that's being given to be heard. It's amazing how rapidly our minds work. But you also have to understand, it's on both sides of the fence. If someone is not open to being assisted, you can try to drag them, and it's not going to work. Sometimes that's a very tough thing to do. I happen to be up in the position to observe a family that was trying to force one of their members to get some help, and justifiably so. This was a young woman that was anorexic, was really in a mess. She really needed help. But you know what? She didn't want it. And they begged and they pleaded because they loved this member of the family. They wanted her well. They wanted her healthy. But until she was willing to change her mind, no matter what they did, she sabotaged it. And that's something we have to keep in mind. So Ben Franklin was quite wise there. small amounts regularly saved is how the road to wealth is paved. When I was talking about millionaires one day, it was fascinating to find that those people that were millionaires and had managed their money wisely, many of them had developed a good savings habit long before they became the millionaires. In fact, that's how they became millionaires, was through working with the money that they had, investing, building a business, doing various things, acquiring properties, assets, until they were able to have what they wanted. So many times people are out there looking for lottery tickets to win the big number. Well, that may happen in one in a billion situations, and I think that's great, but are you aware that a good 95%, if not more, of people that win millions of dollars within 3 to 5 years, it's all gone, and they're right back to the same position they were before? Why? Because they haven't understood how working with money, investing money, and saving money is the real road to wealth. Our spending mysteriously increased so as to devour all our available income. To be wealthy, you must think of saving as well as spending. That's something that if you have a windfall of any kind, depending on what your circumstances are, because there's sometimes things that occur like sickness or different things that can take away just about all of your capital. But if that doesn't happen, life happens. Remember, money can always be earned, but you've got to think of saving as well as spending. So maybe you give up some of your triple lattes if that was one of your extravagances. Maybe have it once a month instead of 5 days a week and put that money aside in something else. Vessels large may venture more, but little boats should keep near shore. Be aware of your environment. Be aware of where you are. Be on the side of thoughtfulness. You don't have to be fearful. Be thoughtful. Another statement, when you make a bargain, you may perhaps think little of payment, but creditors have better memories than debtors. That is true. I think we can all relate to that. Be aware that whatever you make the agreement for, you're responsible for that. And it is really important. He who goes a-borrowing goes a-sorrowing, and that I think is self-explanatory. A good paymaster is lord of another man's purse. Remember Tennessee, Ernie Ford, 16 tons, and all you get is another day older and deeper in debt. Tennessee Ernie Ford was just fabulous with that piece of music, but the words were ringing true then, and they ring true today. Establish good habits, and they will establish you. That is so true. Sometimes we find we've developed certain patternings in our life, and if we want to make changes, we want to change our habits. Well, they say it takes anywhere from 21 days to 30 days to change a habit, but you have to do it often enough. Like if you wanted to exercise, find something that you enjoy doing on a regular basis, but make a commitment to that and start off with something that you're comfortable with. And I'm just using that as an example. It can be anything from better business habits to personal habits to anything and everything that someone might have a concern about. So start off and work with one at a time. Good old Ben Franklin used to keep a notebook on himself, and he said he never got there where everything was totally perfect. Timid souls never conquer strong foes. Timid souls never conquer strong foes. Boy, that's so true. You have to be willing to stand up, stand tall, and speak out when it's necessary. That was a hard one for me to learn. I don't know about you, but that was a tough one. Because I was often told, keep your mouth shut, don't open it, don't make waves. Any of that sound familiar? Well, it doesn't mean you have to be arrogant or obnoxious. It means there are times that you have to stand your ground, and you really have to look at what means something to you. What are your standards? And you may have a situation where you're going to have to walk a different direction from maybe the company that you're keeping. That's not a bad thing, but it's a way of becoming an individual. And he who lies down with dogs, this is the last one, rises up with fleas. Not my dogs. They don't get fleas. But anyway, you get the gist. And I think that it is so true. We have to be aware on various levels the company we're going to keep. Who are we going to associate with? What material are we going to fill our mind with? There's another saying that I like, garbage in, garbage out. And it's very much compatible with he who lies down with dogs rises up with fleas. The truth is what you associate with mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally has a direct reflection on how you handle life. So those are the wise sayings of Ben Franklin included in the 10 Laws of Wealth and Abundance. And that is just a wonderful, wonderful way, I think, to leave some positive thoughts in the mind. Remember, you're in charge of your brain. That's your job. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Don't you go away now. We've got more good things.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And we also have another direct line of 530-876-3222. There is a lot going on with kids today, and I just really appreciate how youngsters are able to work with computers and they handle these games, and I just think that the kids are so bright. I really do. I've been reading stories to children for years, and I'm amazed when I have three-year-olds in front of me, their ability to comprehend things. I think we underestimate our children. Well, I came across some information that I thought was quite interesting. It's gone are the days when being young and glued to the computer branded you as a geek. Well, it's not that way anymore because computers are such a part of life that a good 88% plus of teens being online, that's what they do. That's what it is. And it's all about blogging and they create characters on online role-playing games. They just have so much going on. Now, there is a Winnetka, Illinois-based developmental psychologist, Jean Beckman. She has an attitude about the involvement that young people have with computers. She seems to think that it's detrimental to social and psychological development if children have limited interaction with their peers face-to-face. Now, that goes for adults as well. It's really important to remember. It's not just the kids. It's the adults as well. She said some 90% of our communication is nonverbal, and kids are not learning the social clues or how to deal with people in a non-classroom situation. So she said, hey, parents, it's up to you to create a balance between the world that they're involved with, which is the digital computer world, and the real one. you know what? I have found that there are so many adults that are doing the same thing. So, wake up adults so that the kids will be able to do a balance. Now, how do you balance this out? Get them involved in sports. Maybe say that there's a certain amount of time that they have on the computer. I know of one family, their computer is in the kitchen. And they have time allotments. And every family member, because mom's a professional, dad's a professional, and then the kids have their schoolwork. And they said, look, we're going to have to do this in such a way that we're going to manage the time on the computer. And mom and dad then can sort of keep an eye on what the kids are involved with. But it involves the family, as well as keeping, you know, tabs on whatever's going on. And this woman, Jean Beckman, she said, parents at school events, she finds it's very disturbing that they're paying more attention to their BlackBerries, their cell phones. And she said, you have to be an example. That's what I said a moment ago. You can't expect your kids to take your advice if you're not practicing what you preach. Also, have your kids invite friends over. Now, you'd think that this is something that would be considered normal, but it isn't. But you need to be able to have your kids involved with interaction with others so that they can learn about facial expression, so they can learn social graces and understand body language and tone of voice. And you know what? They might become a lot better than you at understanding many things. But the truth is, as adults, we really have to be aware of our kids and recognize that what we do makes a difference. I think turning off the computer and maybe turning off the television and having a potluck or something of this nature where friends and family come over, it's really a good idea. On the other side, the kids that are working with these digital formats and with the computers, their minds work so quickly and they are so good at problem solving. It has been such an asset that if they are really adaptive in working with the computers and you put them into social environments where they learn skills, by the time they're ready for college, they are so ready to participate in life. We are in an era that is demanding change. Technology is changing. But the basics of human relationships pretty much stay the same. So just keep that in mind. And adults, again, we have to pay attention to how we react. If we get glued to the computer or to the television screen and we become the chair or couch potato of type, we have to remember, if we're that kind of an example, how much do you expect our kids to follow? It's a good thing to keep in mind. Not only that, but it's always good to be able to take a break and to realize there's more to life than a computer screen. But it is very much in our lives on so many multiple levels. I mean, it's with banking, it's with shopping, and you name it. It's becoming more and more and more a part of life. And I'm grateful for it because it enables me to do a lot of things that otherwise it would have taken a long time to get accomplished. So I'm very grateful for it. But I do know that it can also be a challenge, and it can lock you up and tie you up in unusual ways. This is Donna Siebel. Also, I want to mention to you that I'm going to be appearing, for those of you in the state of Washington, I am going to be appearing at the Psychic Spectrum Expo, which is coming up on the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th of this month. This is a dynamic month. We are going to have the largest psychic expo that has ever been put on in the Pacific Northwest. It's going to be at SeaTac Hilton, and it is just filled with all kinds of products and services and activities and action, and I'm going to be in booth 117. We'll be doing a remote broadcast from that fabulous event as well, and I will be speaking each of the days of that event, and my schedule is posted in the newsletter that went out for this month. So if you haven't received a copy and you'd like to read it, go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find it right there. Well, my goodness, we're almost out of time, and I want to thank you so much for your support, for your feedback, and if there's something special about the show you would like to have me consider, then please send me an email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. In the meantime, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'll be talking to you live tomorrow from Los Angeles, California, wherever you are, be safe, be well, and have fun. Life is to be enjoyed. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, this is Mara Comey. I'm really glad you're enjoying bbsradio.com. I would like to invite you to my personal website at www.maracome.com.
This is Pete Seeger, and you're listening to BBS Radio.